Welcome to PHCP Pros Behind the Wall podcast. I'm Ellen Rohr, plumber's wife, industry icon, and COO of Zoom Drain Franchising Company. With this podcast, our intention is to have real, thought-provoking conversations with people from across the PHCP industry. Of course, we want to entertain and encourage. Mostly, we want to connect and allow our guests to be vulnerable, to explore insights gained and lessons learned. Let's go behind the wall. One of my new best friends is on the podcast with me today. Hello, Laura Kelly.
Hello, Ellen. Thank you for having me. I'm very well, thank you.
Well, how would you introduce yourself? Before I introduce you, how would you introduce yourself?
I'm Irish, firstly, I guess, if everybody hasn't already guessed.
I told the PHCP pros, I said, and she's Irish, your voice is fantastic. It's going to be a great podcast.
Oh, well, super. Well, thank you. Hopefully. So, yeah, I'm Irish. I'm here now about 2 years or so. I came here, I think, with just a burning fire in my belly to truly like grow. And my dad is somebody I always looked up to, and he's actually a contractor himself. And lo and behold, and we'll get into this story, I ended up marrying a contractor. So now our family business, which Paul Kelly and Josh have grown, has now began at 6.5 million and has grown to just over 120 last year. So as much as I always love contractors, I didn't think I'd run into such successful ones. So that's kind of my story. In uni, I won valedictorian from just, you know, working truly flipping hard, probably too hard. I should have probably partied a little bit more, but I think it kind of lighted a flame in my belly to just see more of the world. And I knew America is where all the growing's happening. So on a plane, I came.
Let me pause you for a moment. There's more. I want to hear all the stories behind that.
Go ahead.
What you started there. Right now, like your official title is you have Clover Marketing.
Correct.
So,
yeah.
Clover Marketing does what?
So Clover Marketing is, we are a consulting business along with, we deliver a product called Jam Sessions. So the consulting side of our business is basically Josh has turned around our HVAC company and just grown it to the number that it's at today. So he consults for companies across the United States. And then what Jam Sessions is, it's we interview people who are doing tremendously well in the industry. They give us actionables. The key is actionables. So they deliver. They tell us actionables of what they're doing in their industry. They literally give us their playbooks, their transcripts, their SOPs, everything that they're doing in their business right now associated with a particular topic. And we distribute that across, we make that product available to contractors all over the world. And we have lots of contractors in America, Canada. I'm after getting a few in Ireland, which is always cool.
Cool.
But yeah, and we give contractors the opportunity to learn from the best of the best without having to travel to conferences. And sometimes I think we all want to learn from the best, but we don't know how to find the best, or, you know, how to approach them. You don't want to be burdening them. They're busy people. And we've all these lies and stuff that we tell ourselves. So these are just delivered to your email once a month. And it's exciting stuff that's helped contractors, some grow by millions, some tens of millions. So it's been an honor and amazing to watch their growth.
How we came together. So, and that we have the mutual friend of your husband, Josh Kelly. I'm really interested though, in let's go back to when you were a kid, because you obviously have a lot of, I call it fizz, but energy is the stuff you can't teach or train. That's just that, you know, driving force that makes you want more. So go back to the early days of when you discovered that about yourself. Like, how did you know you were meant for great things or the entrepreneurial lifestyle?
Yeah, great question. So when I tell this story, people are like, ugh. It started, I think my first thing started... The story is when I started piercing my friend's ears and charging them money. That's a part of the story. But I think it started, I grew up in a B&B, and it's kind of an outdated concept now. It's just bed and breakfast. So my mum used to leave the house and she'd say, I'll give you €5 for every room that you sell. And I would just absolutely make sure that anybody who came into the house were taken care of in our guest house and they stayed with us. So that was kind of, I loved the, I love facilitating something for a person along with, I guess, making money and making something of my own. And what I then ended up doing was I actually contacted tourist office throughout my city. So the tourist office were then working for me. And I was like, oh, this is cool. So that was one of the things. And it was cool to have like 50-year-olds, 40-year-olds working for like, maybe an 8-year-old at the time. that was fun. And after that, I started babysitting, and I realized that I couldn't cater for everybody that wanted me to babysit. So my friends ended up paying me for babysitting gigs. So that was another entrepreneurial story that was fun too. And another one was piercing people's ears in the town, and they actually paid me for it. And I've had many other things, like selling lemonade as a kid, that typical story. Just anything that allowed me help people is a big driving force for me. Helping people, huge driving force. And I think just doing something that nobody else is doing. And another thing that I do think lighted a flame in me, my dad is just like a grafter. So to the point, he was like the authoritarian one. Like if you were not working, he was like disappointed. So he'd come into the house and you got to be like up off your ass and working, doing something around the house. So I think it was just ingrained into me, you know, as a young kid, get up, work. We weren't allowed our pajamas on while walking around the house in the morning. You just got to get up, get to work. What are you doing to make money? That kind of mindset was just drilled in. And I don't know, I think everybody seeks their parents' approval. So at that point, I was like, well, yeah, I better get to work. So yeah.
Now, tell me, siblings, how many siblings do you have?
I have a younger sister and a younger brother. So I'm the oldest. So I kind of, lessons I've learned, I can kind of share back with them so they don't have to, I guess, make the same mistakes. But really, like, yeah, it's incredible to watch them grow and see how they're being influenced by me, which I feel is an honor. And I guess learn from me too in ways that I from some mistakes for sure, and then from some things that I did it very well as well. In thanks.
Now, is the rest of the family still in Ireland?
Yes, family is still in Ireland. Right, they're actually supposed to come here like 3 months ago, but COVID kind of turned all those plans on its head. Oh. Yeah, it can be tough, you know. They're across seas, and it was for sure a big sacrifice. And I think I made the sacrifice for a really special person, so it's worth it every day. But it's tough, you know. My grandma's getting older, love her to bits, and I might not be able to see her for several months. And even when I'm home, I might not see her because she's old. And mm-hmm. I don't want to put her in the position of potentially getting COVID.
Well, like old is a relative term. As you get older, you won't figure this out. And this is a super in-flight question that I'm going to ask anyway.
Shoot.
How old are you?
How old am I? So yeah, people are typically shocked. They call me an old soul. I'm only 24, but I tend to, if you look at my friend group, particularly now, they're all older. And I just think I love wisdom. I love learning from wise people. And I don't know, does anybody on this show know, but Ellen Rohr has become such a good friend because like she's someone I look up to, and I'm happy to go into why I choose mentors and the way I choose mentors.
Well, we want to talk about that, and I want to not neglect to mention that's really what's attractive to me about you, because I felt like I didn't even wake up till I was like 35, and I am interested in what it takes to magnetize fizzy, young at heart people with a beginner heart to our industry. So I don't expect it. Well, let's find out. Like, how did you come to the U.S.? Like, what was that journey all about? What were you looking for?
Yeah, what I was actually looking for was I discovered this concept, which was called mental toughness. And basically, I was always wanted to be successful. So the idea was, what do the successful people do that's led them to where they're at today? So that's what I studied in uni. And I developed like this concept and won awards, all that kind of stuff. But I was like, you know, how can I make money from this? You see academias where they go to uni, they spend a ton of money, and they're broke. And I was like, that's not going to be me. That's not going to be me. So I was like, how can I turn this into a business? So the idea was, go to America, learn. I didn't know anything about marketing at the time. Go to America, learn about marketing, and come back and grow the business.
Mean like your father's business at this point?
No, it was actually to create my own business from this idea, you know, like
temporarily, and then go back to Ireland.
Correct. Yeah, yeah, that was the goal. Right. That was the goal. And obviously, I'm married here in America, exceptionally happy. So the plan went pear shaped, and I always tell Josh he ruined my plan. But obviously, I'm very glad at the same time. Yeah. So when I came here to America, it was kind of crazy. I had like 3 weeks to find a job, or I'd get sent home. So I remember I was just like, I can't just send resumes, you know, people don't know me. I it's not going to be enough time. So I literally just looked up every event that was going on in Boston. I was staying in Boston at the time. My parents were like, you're not going to New York, you're going to Boston. We've been there. You have a cousin there. So Boston it was. So anyways, Boston it was. I had 3 weeks to find a job. So I literally went to like conferences after conferences. And the like a week in, I was just lucky enough to go to what you call the Small Business Expo. It was this big conference run by Google and a company called PowerTeam. And I literally went up to the keynote speaker at the end, and it was my first marketing conference. I was gobsmacked. I just thought this was the best thing yet. And as I've advanced, obviously, it was great, but it was not the greatest stuff yet. But again, I was so new to the industry. I was like, wow. Anyway, I thought this guy was a total genius, and he is an incredible dude, and he taught me a lot. His name is Bill Walsh. And I went up to him at the end of the conference, and I was like, I want to work for you. Just straight up, I want to work for you. And he was like, huh? And I was like, I want to work for you. And I asked him tons of questions. And he was like, you're interesting. Why don't you come for breakfast in the morning? And I was like, wow, well, amazing. Absolutely. Thank you so much. And because I still wanted to learn, because I was like, you know, this might go nowhere. I sat down on the stage next to him, and he looked at me again, and he was like, you know what? Heck, come for dinner tonight. So I went for dinner with him that night, and I was like, I really want to work for you, Bill. I'm going to work for you. I'm going to figure out how. I have no idea how, but I'll figure out how. And he was like, what do you know? And I was like, honestly, I have a bloody great work ethic, and I'll figure it out after that. So I ended up 4 days later, I was in a cafe in Boston again, researching places that I could, people I could work for, and researching conferences and stuff. And he texted me and he said, I want you to run my event for me in Chicago. Thousands and thousands of people go to this. Your flight leaves in 4 hours. And I was right in the middle of the city. I was staying like maybe an hour out of Boston. So I literally, I had to like sprint for a train, got on a train, had to sprint for another 40 minutes, get home, pack, come back. And what was supposed to be a weekend running a conference turned out to be like maybe five months on the road. I wore the same outfits every second day. I had the same outfits, and I would just never wear those outfits again. So sick of them. And then, yeah, I was recruited for a conference in Las Vegas to run that. And that's when I actually transitioned out of Bill Walsh. But during that period, I was in like a new state every third day we were in a new state.
Well, I like an experience that causes like a condensed life to happen. Yeah. What did you learn during, like, as you look back on it right now, what was one of the major things that you learned from just saying yes and being on the road like that?
Wow, a lot. A big thing I learned is there's such a difference in people from the West Coast and the East Coast. I was consistently having to adapt. And I think that's what's key, is the ability to adapt. I had to consistently be adaptable and gauge what the people I was interacting with, who they were, what they wanted, what they valued, and tap into the values that kind of aligned with them and communicate to them from that place. So that was a really big thing. As well, I think, you know, emotional resilience. Like I didn't know anybody. I consistently didn't know anybody because I was consistently moving. So like loneliness was for sure a thing. And it forced me to become just a really good communicator, a really good networker. And that I think is key, you know, network, 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 network. And I know we've all heard it before, but I think that's what kind of got me through. You know, the people I began to know in one city, I just kind of kept in touch with as I kept going. And I took what would have been a very lonely journey, because I was not seeing everybody every day. It was someone different all the time. Turned out to be, you know, a really well-supported one. But it wasn't like that at the start. At the start, honestly, I was just anxious and overwhelmed because I knew nobody.
Were you discounted because of your age?
Ah, good question. I don't think so. People took me under their wing. And since I've been young, people said I've been an old soul. Now, I do think the age can go against me sometimes, like speaking on stage, for instance. I think it would be hard, and maybe this is just a self-sabotaging thought, to gain authority when I am so young and look so young. But when people actually get to know me, what they say is, wow, how do you know so much for being so young? So again, it's I suppose, having to cross the prejudgments that people have, which I get, you know, like, who am I? I'm only 24 years on this planet. So how am I different? But I think I just invested myself in just consistently learning from such a young age that differentiates me a bit. But yeah, it comes with battles, but I'm doing my best to overcome them. And thankfully
let's talk about what anchored you to the United States, because I know your husband and I absolutely love Josh Kelly and his dad, Paul Kelly. Everything Paul Kelly told me, I've repeated like 100 times. These are really smart business guys, and they have Parker Brothers in Arizona. And Josh has also got Review Kangaroo. So you really did. You met some heavyweights in our industry. How did that happen?
Great question. It's for sure put a spanner in the works, and one I wasn't expecting. I how it all started was I was running a conference in Las Vegas, and I had to recruit sponsors for the podcast. And sorry, not for the podcast, for the event. And I went to an event called Social Media Marketing, and Josh was actually speaking at it. And I went over to his booth, and I thought, you know, these are a perfect fit. And I encouraged them to come to encourage them to be a sponsor at SAM. And Josh turned around and said to me, why don't you come out with us for drinks? And I was like, well, yeah, you know, I'll, if I'm not going to sell them now, I'll sell them later tonight. And thinking I was meeting the whole team, when in fact, I either misheard or I don't know, that Josh said, no, why don't you and I go for a drink? I was not expecting it even remotely. So I was totally taken aback when I arrived at the bar and it was just Josh, because it turned out to what I thought was going to be like a business meeting to obviously more of a date. So it started from there. And then we were traveling. I was running this event. We just traveled back and forth every single weekend, and kind of inseparable, like every day talking, felt like we knew each other a whole lot, like felt like we knew each other for a very long time. And it came to me not having a whole lot left in my visa. And Josh was like, you know, we're not going to be apart. And I was like, well, Josh, I have to go home. You know, it's my visa. I have to go home. I have these commitments. My family's at home. And he was like, you're going to have to, you've got to move in. And I was like, oh my gosh, but why? To be honest, Ellen, I wasn't willing to break my heart and move in and have to go home in like 2 months, you know, or 3 months or whatever it was at the time. I was like, no, I can't do that. You know, I'm not willing to put my heart on the line like that. And all I wanted to was, because I was like, just, we were mad about each other. And
this is so cute.
So anyways, I was just like, oh my gosh. Oh, sorry. That's what ended up happening was I got a visa for another 6 months, and I was like, you know, I've like 9 months or so. That's worth it. I'm going to move in. That's worth it. So I did. And Josh was like, you know, I'm never letting you out of my sight. We're staying together. And we knew very early on that we were going to get married, whether it was being apart for several years or not. We knew. And Josh was like, you know, you know, I know, we're going to get married. Let's just do it. So we had to make the very kind of scary call to our parents. You know, we wish we were together longer than we were to make that conversation easier with our parents. But I think they loved, my parents knew that, you know, I would never say such a crazy thing unless the person that I was saying it about was a good person. And Paul and Tricia, my mother and father-in-law, from day one said, there's something special about this girl.
Well, there must be some Irish blood in that Kelly last name too, right?
Yeah, he's actually, he's from Kerry, and Kerry's actually the rival city of Cork. So,
yeah. Yeah, you'll have to watch that when you finally make it back to Ireland.
Yeah, I know. And everybody from Kerry claims that it's the best county, and everybody from Cork. So I don't know. I think we're going to have to take him to like a hurling or an Irish football game and just let the players speak themselves.
That sounds perfect. All right. So as you and Josh decided to work together, marketing has really always been what you wanted to do. Why marketing? And okay, so a two-part question is like, why is marketing really? Because I find marketing incredibly intimidating. Like it's, yeah. It's the area of business I feel the least secure in every single day. I just get my butt handed to me so often that I'm like, oh, but you seem really excited about it. I know there are some people who just love it, and you are one. And then springboard from that to coming at this industry with a fresh set of eyes and all your energy. What are a few things that people in the dirty jobs industry are missing when it comes to marketing? So like, what are some opportunities for us as well? So why do you love it so much? And what should we know about marketing that we're missing?
Super questions. So firstly, I don't blame you for being intimidated by marketing. It's consistently evolving and changing. Like what worked 2 years ago doesn't work now. It's consistently evolving and changing. And it's, you know, do you want to put up with that? And some people just don't. And I get it. You know, it's an unpredictable industry, and you've got to have money behind it. You've got to have money to market, because if you don't, it's not like do X and you'll get this result. You might do X and get this result last year, but it might not be the same this year. So it can be hard. And I think what can help you still grow, even though if you're not really marketing, is just, I think, learning from the best people in the industry. So what I think I'd like to touch on even more is I'm relatively new to the industry. You know, I grew up with a contractor my whole life, but to operate with people who truly just want to make a difference in the contracting space, like Paul and Josh, I've learned from osmosis. I'm consistently saying, Josh, leave your office open. I want to learn. And the ideas I've taken from that I think that in speaking to other contractors, they've never actually heard before is like, Paul always speaks about a concept called how much can I do versus how little can I do. And I thought this was huge, and I've actually applied it to loads of different areas of my life. What Paul Kelly speaks about is we can't apply the how much can I do strategy in every area of our lives. We don't have the time, we don't have the bandwidth. So Paul says you have to choose areas of your life that you can apply the how much can I do. And what he means by that is throw everything you've got at this. Now, if we did that in everything in our lives, we'd be just wrecked tired and we probably wouldn't be effective at everything. You know, it's like a person who tries to do everything is good at nothing. So he specializes. And I think it's been brilliant because if you apply the how much can I do strategy to learning and investing in your business and your family, I hope, because that's obviously so important for all of us, you will reap incredible results, regardless of whether you have budget or even if you have budget. Whatever you do, throw yourself into your business and maybe think about how can you play the how little can I do game in areas of your life that are not as crucial, you know, like, you know, maybe learning Spanish right now is something that you should possibly put off. Those little things, I think it's really important to say, okay, how can I get away with playing the how little can I do in this area of my life and still get by? And what areas of my life do I need to play the how much can I do game?
I'm going to stop you right there. That is that's what I like about Paul Kelly. He's obviously Irish because he usually has
a
turn of a phrase that says a whole lot.
Yep.
Right.
Yep,
I have not heard this expression before, but with marketing, so often people are saying, well, I'll only spend $1,000. I'm only going to do this. But one of the frustrating things about marketing is until you spend, you don't know what's going to work.
Yep.
So with marketing, you can find yourself at least for a period of time, we're going to throw as much as we can at marketing. Yep. That's a really bold move.
Yeah,
and I'm inspired by that.
Yeah, you can approach that in many different ways. It might be like I learned from an incredible guy called Perry Belcher before, and he takes a topic every single year and throws himself into that topic for the whole year, and then he moves on. So, like another idea that I think that you must do on top of marketing, or if you're at a limited budget, you should also do is the importance of your CSRs. And this is something that we actually have Brigham. He's a leading trader for Lennox and many of the major dealers out there.
I know Brigham.
He's awesome.
He's a Utahan like me.
He is awesome, isn't he? He's such a super guy.
Really good.
He's mm-hmm. cool. We've had incredible people on Job Sessions, you included, and Brian's one of them. And what he speaks about is the power of $1 million CSR, like creating $1 million CSR. And I think this also ties into marketing because the first person who answers the phone when a customer calls is your CSR. They have the first interaction with that customer. And it surprises me all the time that when I call contracting businesses, they don't answer their phone. And it's just like that call could have cost you so much money. Or even if they answer the phone, sometimes you get in such an incredible person the other side of the phone. They're so helpful. You just want to find a way to do business with them because they're so wonderful. And there's also times that you call these people and they just sound like they're having such a glum day. And nobody wants to be part of that, you know? And I think it's important, of course, to just, it's not always easy, but park your issues at the door. And what Brigham talks about is, you know, get your people operating from their heart. So many of us are like just so analytical. We're afraid we're saying the wrong thing. Just, you know, be authentic, be yourself and do it with a smile. And it's so important to just have all your CSRs just be authentic, be themselves and try and pass on that positivity to the people that they're talking to. And because of that, sales will increase so dramatically. That is just so, I think people don't realize the importance of your CSRs. We all train our techs, we train our salespeople, obviously so important. But see it, your CSR is the first interaction that a customer has. It's the start of your funnel. And if you get that wrong, you might even not have the opportunity for your sales guy to even get there.
I love this. There is a statistic that they use a lot in marketing and they call it ROI. It's not technically ROI. What it is like if you spend $1,000 on a marketing vehicle and that marketing vehicle leads to 10,000 in sales, they'll say the ROI is 10-1.
Yep.
Here's the problem with that statistic, and it's all over our industry, is that there is the marketing lead, the handoff to that person who answers the phone.
Yep.
It's literally the sales number is a disconnect from the marketing. And so often someone like you is bound by this ROI statistic that you didn't blow. They did by not answering the phone. So like getting the statistic right. So when we track at Zoom, everyone talks about ROI, so we do too. However, it's really the number of calls per lead source and cost per call per lead source. And then at that point, That's our job to catch that call.
Right.
But the people who get that, Laura, they're listening to that phone. Like they hear that whistle.
Yeah.
The train's coming. You know, they get it. And the entrepreneurs that get that do much better than those who will turn back to you and say, you know, it didn't lead to anything or, you see where I'm going with that, that it's really the handoff that makes such a big difference. Thanks for reminding me about that.
No, not at all. And I think, I think people think marketing is like, advertising, billboards, all of that, which is, of course, that's marketing. But also marketing is like the words that come out of your mouth, like the words that come out of your CSR's mouth, your sales guy's mouth. It's representing the company. That's marketing. People think marketing is, which it is, like billboards, like, media buying, all of that. Absolutely. So important. But again, the words that come out of your mouth is as powerful as marketing.
Give us one more nugget that with your fresh eyes and with your youth and enthusiasm, as you look at our industry, what are you seeing that many people miss? What's an opportunity that many people miss?
An opportunity that I've recently learned about, which I thought was ingenious, is when companies are trying to sell installs specifically, or anything, it applies to anything. Say, particularly for a large ticket item, if something costs X amount and it seems like a large number for a potential customer, how can that be broken down? And what I've seen in the industry and what I've seen Paul Kelly do is actually break it down to a daily amount. So, for instance, if something costs like $3,000, break that down to a daily amount. So, for instance, if that came to, I don't know, excuse my math here, but like if it was like $3 a day, if a customer is charged $3 a day for something, it immediately seems affordable. And affordability is the key to people buying or not buying. And if a price of anything is broken down to a certain dollar a day amount, like $3 a day, people spend more on coffee. People spend more on lunch, and people are willing to spend more on contracting services if you make it seem affordable, because it is affordable. But people get so overwhelmed by this like big dollar amount, which I get. It can be out of budget, especially if it's an unexpected event. But break it down to that daily amount, $3 a day. And then it also facilitates upselling. Like for an extra $150, you could have X, Y, and Z more. So people are like, heck yeah, I want the best thing. Give me it for only $150 more and I get all of this. Absolutely. Sign me up.
That is a really old school concept, reducing to the ridiculous like that. And to hear you present that as something fresh and new, I think there's a whole generation of people who never discovered that. So thank you for that. Some of these old school OG concepts are evergreen, but I haven't heard it in a while. Like that's a really good one to remind people of. That's probably where Paul got it. Paul's been around the block a time or two. Not that I'm indicating that he might be old. He's not.
I won't say a word.
But that idea is so powerful. So how do we make it affordable? Affordable is a lovely word. One of the things I've noticed, I went to Ireland once and I loved it. Is how intriguing Irish people are with language. They take language seriously. They tell a good story. They use the proper word to describe something. Do you think that that's given you an edge in your marketing career?
I think people are always like taken aback by words I say. So I think it's for sure helped with opening rates on emails and just maybe creating memorability, because people are like, what? What did
like
you say?
Like gobsmacked is not a common US term.
I guess it's not. So yeah, I think I've been growing people's Irish dictionaries for sure. And I've probably left people with confused faces as well. But it's been so much fun. Coming here has allowed me to just grow so much as an individual, as a professional. It's truly exposed me to exceptionally successful people, like honestly, Ellen, to not blow your own horn or to give you a big head, you being one of them. And it is awesome. It's something I'm forever grateful for. Like my journey has been great and I'm for sure not finished. I have so much more to learn and grow in, and I'll continue to push myself next to people that I do admire to continually learn from osmosis and pick up some of the ideas that we deliver in job sessions that I've just shared with you guys. And again, that's truly from from doing these jam sessions, listening to the people that we get on there and being around like Paul, Josh, people who are doing, and you, people who are doing super. And I think you cannot value enough the importance of who you surround yourself by. You know, I think we all know that you're the best of the five you surround yourself by. So bloody heck, put yourself around good people.
So if we wanted to engage more people with a beginner's heart, a set of eyes, the energy of youth, what could you share with us as employers to magnetize people like yourself to this industry? Like, what's so great about this industry that we could do? How could we do a better job of finding great people like you?
For me, what's so appealing is people are so down to earth. You know, like, instead of using a swear word, I'll say there's no sugar attached. So instead of the word that so many of us use, I want to obviously respect the audience here and you guys for having me on. But yeah, it's the people that this industry attract. You know, everybody's just down to earth, want to just get on with things, like make a good living. And I think why that's attractive is there's, for instance, in corporate, in marketing as well, sometimes it attracts like fakeness. We all see on like sometimes Instagram, Facebook, people are putting their best self forward. And of course, that's normal. But again, I think contractors breed this sense of authenticity, you know? And I think that to me is very attractive. Maybe not to everybody, but also it's a very prosperous career. Like, we're right in the middle of the coronavirus. Almost every industry is being affected besides the essential businesses. And like, if you're in the contracting space, you're an essential business. You know, if your toilet overflows, you're not just going to leave it. You need people there. If something happens with your drains, you know, you need people to fix it. So because of that, young people can thrive in their career and feel very secure in their job. And I think that's powerful. You know, we all need some sort of safety to know that you've job security. Job security has actually been found to be the leading predictor of employee happiness. And the contracting space facilitates that, hands down. I only spoke with a young marketing girl the other day who's in a HVAC company. She said to me, I never thought I'd be in the contracting space, but I wouldn't change it for the world. And there's actually an Instagram and Facebook page called Women in HVAC. And it has
awesome.
They're awesome.
This podcast. I love them.
They're awesome. And I don't know them well enough. I know many incredible men in the industry and I need to start meeting more women. But I see the people on there, young people, and it's great. I do think the industry's taken a turn. I do think it's so important that to remember that you can go to college, and I absolutely am all behind education, but you could go to college, come out, and you're up to your ears in debt. Or you can enter the contracting space and be making 80 million in 2 years. Like, I've seen techs do that. And I just think that's incredible. You know, you're facilitating so much more for your life, for your family's
80
life.
80 million in 2 years is probably a bit aggressive. Did you mean 80,000?
Oh my gosh, 80,000. Wow.
I'm just like, going, well, that's a good story.
Well, everybody's 80, like,
80,000 never go workable.
80,000. Oh my gosh. Thank you, Ellen, for stopping me. Well, now I think we all would just give up on whatever we're doing and become a tech.
Where did they work?
Yeah, right. But 80,000.
However, you know, it's all a step on this prosperous journey. And I'm so glad you're here. And as someone who married a contractor, I married a plumber 37 years ago. Welcome to the family.
I see a
prosperous career for you and a wonderful family in development here too. So I'm so happy to have you and Josh as my friends. So thanks so much for sharing your story with us today.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thank you for having me. And I'm grateful to be here, and thank you again.
Yay! Mwah. Well, that's it for Behind the Wall with Laura Kelly. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen. Bye, mind yourself.